Householders in every state, I think, face big increases in the cost of electricity. State governments say the rises are needed to cover the cost of infrastructure and to anticipate the impact of a price on carbon. We all need energy, but can you shield yourself from these increasing costs? After all, solar panels on the roof are still pricey. Giles Parkinson's the editor of Climate Spectator, a website that specialises in climate and energy issues, the politics and the business, and he joins me in the studio now. Welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Richard.
Why has there been this big jump in the cost of electricity seemingly across the country? Because we are overwhelmingly a coal-based economy and we have loads of it.
We do have loads of it, but what we haven't done over the last 5 to 10 years is invest in the infrastructure needed to support it. So, and part of the reason for that is either the governments haven't have decided to spend money elsewhere, or because there just has not been the investment because people have been expecting a carbon price and don't want to make those big investment decisions. They are big investment decisions unless they know exactly how carbon price is going to be framed. So what we're seeing now is this rush to update infrastructure to make sure that we're sort of keeping the lights on, as it were, and to spend a lot of money on sort of powers and poles. At the same time, the actual costs of energy are actually rising. Coal prices, for instance, have trebled or even quadrupled on the international market. Now, a lot of our electricity is actually shielded from that, from those because of domestic contracts. But that is part of the general move towards higher costs of the commodities. The gas is the same thing.
So there's several things going on here. One is that this increasing linkage between international prices for these commodities, which they didn't used to be linked, did they? We have domestic coal contracts, and I think gas, somewhere like WA with its gas supply, they had a price that was not much more than cost, really, and now it's being linked to the international price. That's one of the things.
That's exactly right. That's right. Yeah, and they faced big rises in WA because of that, because it's linked to the export price of LNG. And in Australia, down the track, we might actually face the same prospect if we start moving towards gas. More gas-fired utilities.
And state governments and utilities generally have put off investment decisions for one reason or another. In the state government case, it's because it's always easier to put off a decision than actually take it, one suspects. Some state governments in particular. We won't mention any names there. What about domestic demand? Is that increasing as well?
It is, yeah. It's I'm not too sure exactly the figures, but I think the what's really increasing is the peak demand, and the peak demand is being driven by people living in bigger households and more appliances. People using
air conditioners.
You've got your plasma TVs. You've just got the numerous laptops, mobile phones, electronic games. Everything is all adding to increased use of energy at home. And it all bundles up, particularly on hot days, in one part of the afternoon, where you get these massive demands of peak demand.
Yeah.
And that puts enormous stresses on the network. And essentially, a lot of the network that needs to be built out is essentially just cater for those really just a couple of dozen hours a year that... where this peak demand arrives, and it's a bit like sort of.
So you might see those couple of dozen hours over 30 days or so.
That's right.
In different times of the year, but I assume concentrated in the summer and perhaps in some of the winter too in the southern states. Mm-hmm. But because we need to be able to cover it at that time, we have to over-engineer everything else.
Well, that's the way the energy industry has been built, they say, for the last 3 or 4 decades. It's simply a matter of you build more poles and wires to carry electricity, and you simply generate more electrons to cater for the demand. Mm. And we cater for peak demand by simply having as much capacity as we can possibly build. It's a bit like having the Sydney Harbour Bridge and making it 10 lanes wide or 20 lanes wide to cope for the morning and the afternoon rush. What people are thinking now is really maybe there's better ways of doing that. And that's when you get things like energy efficiency and demand response management and all those different things which can help offset the load through smart grids and smart meters as well. Educating people about use of prices, use of energy, the price of energy, when it's expensive, when it's cheaper, and what your different options are.
Okay, well, we'll talk about those in a minute. But firstly, I think most people, most of us, probably think electricity is too expensive. Mm. If I'm reading you right, you don't think that.
No, I don't think I'm saying that. I think I think energy prices are going up inevitably.
Right.
I think that's that's inevitable no matter what we do. A lot of the messaging coming out of the government and the advices to the government now is that it might actually go up less if we can introduce a carbon price, and therefore we can switch towards those energy sources which would be cheaper in the long run.
On Life Matters, my guest is Giles Parkinson. He's the editor of Climate Spectator, which is an online journal which really looks at climate and energy issues. Energy suppliers, I think, are anticipating there will eventually be a price on carbon. Is there any extent to which that's already being factored into the bills we pay?
No, I don't really think it is at the moment, because the price isn't there. It might be into the extent to which the investments are delayed because the energy utilities and the investors think that there will be a price on carbon. So they are delaying making those decisions, which might actually... which they could make now, which they'd like to make now, but they're not going to make until they understand how the carbon pricing mechanism will work.
But when we do have a price on carbon, prices will go up.
Prices will go up.
So we have a situation, effectively, where we've gone from electricity arguably being too cheap, which has encouraged people to buy all sorts of energy-consuming devices like plasma screens and ducted air conditioning and things like that, because they're not. It doesn't really affect them, to going up to the present levels and a future, perhaps fairly soon, of higher levels again.
That's right, yes, which is... But it seems to be inevitable, and the argument is that if you have a carbon price, and the sooner that you make a carbon price signal, then people can make those investments into baseload gas generators or whatever it might be, which will actually mean that the prices will not go up as much as they would otherwise.
The federal government is putting its faith in energy efficiency. I think the opposition has been pushing this barrow too. The government, I think, says it can slice up to $300 off household bills. What do you think?
It'll be interesting to see how that works. They've come up with a few different schemes. The principal action that they're proposing about is a savings initiative, which is a bit like a trading scheme in the sense that they're encouraging you to buy more efficient appliances and get the credits from that. So, in other words, the cost of the appliance is actually reduced because you're making savings.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could work. Simply because, as you say, the prices are going up. They're going to more than double simply through the increased network costs, the network build-out. And I think as we see the introduction of smart meters and smart appliances, and people will be able to start seeing what they're actually using. And I think that's going to be a huge drive and a huge influence over the way people use stuff. And we're using... energy at the moment, and we have actually no idea how much it's costing.
Yes,
or even how much we're using. Yeah, there's a complete disconnect.
In fact, there's a disconnect, not just an apparent disconnect then and there. Because you get your bill later, there's a temporal disconnect too. So it feels extremely odd, whereas I think the evidence is that if you give people smart meters, which actually show them how much they're using now and how much it's costing them, people use it less because they can make the connection.
Well, they're sitting there, they're actually watching a dashboard. And it's a bit like having the fuel efficiency in the car. I mean, I think people who buy fuel-efficient cars, they watch it, they're obsessed by it, at least for a while, and they get satisfied, they understand the way it's used and how to drive it more efficiently, and then they don't pay attention after a while. And the same thing will probably happen in the houses. You'll get the dashboards, you get people absolutely obsessed by it, really interested in what they can do.
Yeah.
I'm going to run the fridge at night or in the morning. Not the fridge, sorry, the washing machine. The smart meters might turn off the fridge for an hour or so in the heat of the day. I mean, fridges can do that. They can cope with that. And it's just a matter of people become interested, people become more conscious of the energy costs.
And you change your habits.
It
would be quite... Wouldn't it be quite expensive, though, to distribute everybody with a smart meter?
Yes, it would be expensive. But the savings that they're estimating will probably offset at least part of that. I don't think anyone's actually done any studies to work out exactly what that formula is. But I think the expectation is that we're going to be moving down that line anyway, because that's where the technology is taking us.
Let's talk about solar, because this is something feel we understand. There are now feed-in tariffs to encourage people to invest. It's still expensive to decide that you want to go completely solar. Will the big increases in electricity prices likely to come make more people choose solar?
Well, I guess that depends on what the feed-in tariffs that are being offered by the state governments and what they remain at. The feed-in tariffs have generated an enormous response here and overseas.
Yes.
And in New South Wales, it was phenomenal. I mean, it was the take-up was just extraordinary. And the reason is that it was too generous. And I think everyone recognised that, and I think everyone actually recognised that before it was implemented. But the government decided to go ahead with it anyway. And so it was really a no-brainer for people to come in and take it, because people were even getting systems offered to them for zero cost up front.
Yes.
And yet they were...
60 cents a kilowatt hour.
They're making 60 cents a kilowatt hour, which is three times as much as what most people pay for energy, or twice what people would pay at the peak times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was people simply making money out of it.
So now that has been cut in our United States, being in the news a lot in New South Wales, the feed-in tariff has been cut back to 20 cents a kilowatt hour. Is that more realistic?
Well, it's a strange one. I think the industry wanted a softer cut, down to 40 cents or 30 cents a kilowatt hour, which would still give some incentive for people to install solar. By cutting it down to 20 cents, you're actually paying less for the solar than what people will be paying for the energy from the coal-fired power stations coming back into the house, which is an interesting message to give to the population, that the government actually values the solar less than it does the coal-fired power, which still hasn't actually got a carbon price on it. So that's an interesting message. What happens to solar demand with a 20-cent tariff is interesting. A lot of the industry thinks it's going to decimate their industry, cut it by 80 or 90%.
Yep.
Other people think, ironically, that because price rises, because of the build-out and the poles and wires will be so steep in the coming years, people will still think that, well, actually, I can defray my costs with solar, so I will still invest in the solar system, because and I might get a net tariff instead of a gross feed-in tariff, because I can reduce my bills more effectively that way. I might only get it might be a 6-year payback or a 5-year payback or an 8-year payback. That really depends on how far the other energy prices rise.
Yes.
But I would like to gain some control of what I'm paying in the future, and this is the best way for me to do it.
You can see, if you've got the resources to make the investment, it has a lot of appeal.
Well, the irony of what the New South Wales government has done is that by actually cutting it down to 20 cents and making it more of a longer payback, you're actually just making that less accessible to people on lower means. In fact, you've actually still got a subsidy in there. It's a smaller subsidy, but the subsidy is going to those better off.
Just briefly, the AGL report on energy predicts that most households will adjust their budgets to absorb these higher energy costs, but perhaps up to 10% of low-income households will be in real trouble. Do you think we need some kind of safety net or subsidy or something?
Oh, most certainly, because I think energy costs for some lower-income households are becoming an extraordinary big impost on their budget. The government with CPRS had a mechanism to help those worse off to defray their costs. And I think AGL, interestingly, have proposed using the excess GST that is generated from higher energy costs, and they estimate that to be $1 billion over the next 6 years. That's
yes.
How much energy costs are going up in this state over 6 years. So the GST, the extra GST take from that is about $1 billion, and they're saying, well, that should be redistributed to offset the increased costs for low-income households.
It's rather elegant, isn't it?
It is, but, I mean, it's a sensible way of doing it, really. I mean, there is no avoiding higher energy costs. So the way you've really got to think about it is, well, what's the most effective means of doing this for the state and the country as a whole, and how can those increases be amortised and deflected for those with less means?
Charles, thank you very much for coming. It's been really interesting.
Thank you.
Giles Parkinson's the editor of Climate Spectator, which is a website that covers the business and politics of climate and energy. And you'll find details actually on our website, abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. Next on the show, we're on our bikes.